Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to share their birding knowledge with you and answer your questions. You got a question? This is the time. It's a popular show. Many people don't get through at the end. Get in line and be patient. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 if you want to talk birds with Rich and Julie. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and your birding questions coming up after the news. Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. No, it's not. It's 2:10. It's the wrong page, you dunderhead. It's the birding show. Rich Guthrie's here. Julie Hart is here. Hey, if you have any questions about birds, now's the time. 800-348-2551. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC, is now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. Julie Hart is project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. If you have a question, once again, 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Julie Hart, we are off to a rousing professional start to the program. How are you doing?
I'm good. The season is winding down. I will say that. It's kind of a bittersweet feeling for me and for a lot of
this
Atlasers.
This is the Atlas, yeah.
Yeah, so because this is the fifth and final year of field data collection in the field. And, you know, then we'll be embarking on the next phase of the project, which is reviewing all the data and analyzing it and writing it up and publishing it. So a lot of us are feeling a little like, yay, we finally are like at the end. But what are we going to do next summer?
Well,
so, you know, but it's great. It's a good feeling.
You know, we did a news item. I remember reading it. I guess it was it yesterday or was it Friday or was it 4 years ago? The DEC is kind of looking at the numbers of turkeys, and they are, if you cite them, you're supposed to log into the website and say how many you saw, the sex, and the approximate age, which I thought was hilarious because most people are not going to know how old a bird is, and you can't ask them for the most part. So how do you tell how old the turkey is?
I mean, you can tell, like, with the young ones, you know, like, if they're still a little fluff ball on long, sturdy legs, then you know they're, like, probably within a few days, a week at the most.
Yeah.
Once they start getting some of the normal feathers and less of those fluffy, downy feathers, then you know they're a week or 2 weeks
yeah.
old, something like that.
But
so
once
you
they're
can kind
adults,
of tell.
How can you tell?
The adult is, it's what you think of as an adult.
No, but what I mean is,
yeah.
Okay, so they don't really want to know how old the adult is. It's either an
I think they want to know how old the young are. Yeah.
Rich, how would you tell how old an adult is? Would you count?
You don't. It is once it's full grown adult, it's out there for 1 year or 30 years. It's going to be the same number.
How long does a turkey live? 30 years?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, a real lucky one could make it through. I mean, if he knows how to evade the troubles out there, so sure.
Yeah,
all
right. Like I said,
30 years.
Yeah.
Big birds live a long time, but most of them don't quite get that old because there's so many things they have to cope with.
And in general, go ahead.
Rich, correct me if I'm wrong. Don't the males? Doesn't their beard get longer as they age, or is that a folk
I think
tale?
That's kind of like an interpretation of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of fitted in to make it form a story.
So it's not true?
It may not be.
Do turkeys use Grecian formula when they go gray?
They use a lot of gravy.
Oh, that's good. That's well played, sir. It's the Algonquin Roundtable all of a sudden. It's actually Birding with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. A couple emails came in earlier. One was yesterday, I think, and one was this morning. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. Nadine and Tom in Kingsbury write, "We saw something we've never seen before. Hummingbirds were feeding on the corn tassels in our garden. We wondered what attracted them. Maybe small insects? They have plenty of feeders and flowers all over the yard. Also, one bird was much larger than any we've seen. We were not close enough to see any distinctive markings, so we're not sure if it was also a ruby-throated." And that's from Nadine and Tom in Kingsbury.
Intriguing. Not so much that they're feeding on the corn silk, because there are some insects that are there.
Yeah.
And that's what they're munching down on. Real tiny fruit flies and gnats and that kind of thing. But now, the larger one is intriguing. All sorts of possibilities pop into my head. We have only the one species of hummingbird in the area, and they're all the same size. Once they're out of the nest, they're all the same. Anything other than that is of major interest. If it's a hummingbird, it could have been a moth. Hummingbird moth.
Yeah.
It's one of the sphinx moths. Or it could have been a something else hovering. Some warbler species will hover as they feed.
Really?
And give the impression, not for long. I mean, they're nowhere near as good as a hummingbird.
We saw there are many hummingbirds that come to our bee balm, and they're there now along with
wonderful.
The bees and the hummingbird moths. Mm-hmm. We saw two that almost looked like they were traveling in pairs. Is that common, Julie? No?
No, not really.
They
not
flew together. Maybe this is one that looked like a hummingbird. I don't know. But, I mean, they looked like they were
flying together.
Yeah, do they ever sit on, like, evergreen branches or anything like that?
So, yeah, sometimes they perch wherever there's, like, a nice little open perch, and then they can rest and look around and make sure they're safe. But maybe it was a young one with the mother or something.
Or nest mates, you know, kids.
Yeah.
And they're still getting along. That won't last.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here you go. Here's a beautiful color picture from our friend Kim. And this is a weird-looking bird. Now, it's obviously...
Sorry, I just drank that coffee.
An extreme close-up, and the bird's beak looks very protracted. What do we got there?
Weird. Weird, weird, weird.
Weird?
Yes.
That seems to be the word of the week.
Yes.
Bright white eye iris there, too. Yeah.
It's one of these cameras at a bird feeder
with
a close-up lens that distorts beyond belief, makes this thing look grotesque.
There are other pictures behind it. If you want to take a look, there might be
fisheye lens.
Yeah.
So, oh, my God. That thing, it makes it look like a tropical toucan. I mean, that beak is so huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So what
but
do you
it's
think?
Not.
What is
or
it?
Stork.
Something local.
It's yeah, a right. stork.
It's like a stork. I'm going with grackle. An albino grackle or leucistic grackle.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's got a couple of abnormalities. One is the camera lens and the other is the color.
Would you go along with that, Julie Hart?
I would, yeah. At first I was thinking maybe a northern mockingbird, but I think Rich is right that the bill is a little too thick.
Yeah.
The legs are a little too sturdy for mockingbird. But it's really hard to tell when you have these leucistic birds that are just so white, and you lose all of that visual features that help you ID the birds. So you kind of have to look at things a little differently. But no, I think common grackle is a good...
And the way it's got that beak there, that little notch in the beak is kind of icterid type. So.
Okay, so we'll go with grackle then. I know Kim can't listen because she's working, but her sister's listening. So Kim's sister, grackle, grackle. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. This is from Garrett, who says, "I asked this before, but didn't have enough time to get the email in. I read a story about crows being able to count to four. Mm. How accurate is this? This seems super impressive if it's true."
Mm.
How can you tell?
I think wasn't there just a recent paper that showed that they can recognize up to four items?
Really?
But I think they don't, like, count, like, as in, like, we count. They don't go, like, you know. But they recognize, they can remember four things.
And one thing is, apparently, not so much them, it could be true for them, because what applies to one species may be interpreted and shared with another, is that they don't subtract well. And one of the tricks of some photographers is for two people to go into photography blind, where the bird, the target, the interest bird, will be watching two people go in and be on alert. And then one person will walk out. And the bird, it is assumed that the bird assumes that there is nobody around anymore. And still one person inside they lose track of. And then they begin to act normally. So if you want to get a true action shot of a bird on a nest.
Trick it.
Trick it.
Now,
just
wait a
they
minute.
Don't subtract well.
Sorry for being such an ignoramus, but you should be used to it by now. What's a photography blind?
Oh, just a shelter, a camouflage tent.
And you're trying to make the birds think you're not there.
Right.
Yeah.
If you want them to act normal around the nest, they want to let you not see where the nest is. So they go through evasive maneuvers to avoid going to the nest. And if you want to take a picture of a bird on a nest, you want them to behave normally.
So what you're saying is they have object permanence. In other words, if I go into a photographic blind and the bird can no longer see me, my thought is the bird will not even remember that I was there.
Apparently some do, and the trick is to make them think that you're not there by leaving one behind. I've heard that work. I haven't done it. I can't attest to it personally, but I've heard it work in photography corners.
Yeah, you buy that, Julie Hart?
I do for some of these smarter species that we have.
Not that smart.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Birds, just underway. We'll be back. Rock of Billy, Dave Douglas on the trumpet, and Bill Frisell on the guitar. We've been enjoying that here in Studio A.
Dancing in the hall.
Yes. You both have to simmer down. Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie are here to answer your bird questions. We'll get to the phones in just a minute. Just a couple more emails that came in way before the show. This is from Bill in Clifton Park. I think on the last show, Julie mentioned that migration was already underway, which surprised me. I think it was July. I was wondering why the turnaround time between spring migration and fall migration is so short. But I've noticed over the last week or so a huge increase in hummingbirds at the theater. Then just this morning, I saw a pair of rose-breasted grosbeaks at the feeder. Isn't that quite early? I thought they didn't show up until mid to late September. And I assume when he says an increase in hummingbirds at the theater, he meant feeder.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Because I know they're smart. But
they feed a theater.
I mean, if they can afford to spend $15 on a ticket, then good for them. All right. So anyway, what do you think?
Not that early. I mean, first of all, the hummingbirds and the grosbeaks are here anyway. They're just coming out of the woods, so to speak, and they're fueling up for fall migration for them, which will start not until another 3 or 4 weeks yet.
Mm.
And so the grosbeaks have been there. They just kind of retreat to the woods for the nesting season. And now that the young are out of the nest, mom and pop and the kids will show up. Same with the hummingbirds. And they begin back in July. And in fact, this year they started, at least I noticed, some of them moving south even in June. Their turnaround time, mostly the ones that are leaving that early, were the ones that didn't nest. They did failed at their attempt to nesting. And so they just no reason to hang around here. Let's go back.
Mm.
So
I'll add that, the last few weekends I've been trying to do some atlasing surveys up in the Adirondacks where we have less people, and already starting to see some of the boreal warblers coming down. So bay-breasted warblers already showing up. So they're, some of them are,
amazing.
They're on their way.
How cool is it that you get to go up to places like the Adirondacks and look for birds? I mean,
for my job.
What a gig. That's awesome. All right, the last email for now, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Christian writes, for 2 weeks now, the hawks have been screeching for most of the day as they circle the potato field behind my home. Take the dog out in the morning, screeching and circling. Go out for a walk midday, screeching and circling. Take out the recycling after dinner, screeching and circling. Are they rowdy juveniles or something else? They seem to return to the same pine tree to rest before going back to screeching and circling. And that's from Christian.
Yeah, my guess is that they are rowdy. What did he say? Rowdy
juveniles.
Juveniles, yeah.
Juvenile delinquents.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
They're hungry. Feed me, feed me, feed me.
Feed me. They probably nested right nearby. So
now the screech owls, they don't migrate?
No.
Because the screech owls in my neighborhood, they were making a lot of racket early in the, well, in the spring. And they stopped for a while, and now they're back again. It's very weird.
And now it's the young ones.
As you think that's what it is?
Yeah, a lot of the birds will get really quiet when they're on the nest, and when they have birds in the nest, young, you know, nestlings. But then they'll start to get noisy again once the young ones are, like, begging for food constantly.
Yeah.
They're starting to learn how to move around, and, then it gets noisier again.
And then pretty soon they'll be carving out their territories. They're going to have to boot the kids out and hold on to their corners.
Screech owls are small, though, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So what size owl can grab rabbits? We have tons of rabbits this year. Tons of them in our backyard.
Great horned owl.
So we need some. Can you bring some over?
I bet you they're there.
Yeah, probably.
Well, they're not doing a very good job then. All right, let's go to our phone lines. 800-348-2551. Leanne and Brant Lake, you're on.
Hello?
Leanne.
Leanne.
I am your father.
No, come on, Leanne.
Hello?
Yes. Yay. Oh, yes. Yeah, go ahead.
I am here.
Yes, you're on. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
All right.
Yeah. I live in Brent Lake, and I have not seen a grosbeak at my theater for years, and I don't understand why. We did not recently, but had a lake restored, a small pond. I'm wondering if some other type of wildlife bird kind of outed them out. Like said, don't come here or whatever, but I haven't seen any. I missed them.
Okay.
Well, what kind of grosbeak are we talking about? The rose-breasted grosbeaks, which are here during the summer, or the evening grosbeaks, which are here during the winter and used to be here year-round?
Yes, actually both.
Yes. Okay, well, your rose-breasted grosbeak, we were just talking about that a minute ago, are still there.
Yes,
they're in
I
the
did
woods.
Hear that, yes.
Yes. And they're not ready to come back to the feeder yet. The evening grosbeaks, they're not far from you. They're just a little further north and west up in the foothills of the Adirondacks. And while they used to be all over the place, they receded. And it's just, as best as we can determine, a natural withdrawal or drawback on their population and expansion that they have. So they're still around.
Yeah, I really miss them. Mm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Maybe they'll come back. I don't know.
I think I think so.
But thank you.
Now, before you go, Leanne, Rich, what would be the best food to attract them?
Sunflower seeds.
Sunflower seeds?
That'll be interesting to hear.
Okay. Yes. Sunflower seeds, Leanne.
Yep. I have black oil sunflower seeds.
Okay,
I even got some millet cake. I have a whole kind of entourage of things in the feeder.
Well, I hope you're adding all this to eBird because we could use that kind of data from Brent Lake area.
All right. And while you're on the topic, how do you do that?
Well, the best way right now is to go onto the Atlas site and enter it through the New York Atlas, Julie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you would go to eBird.org/AtlasNY.
Okay.
Or you can use the eBird app on your phone.
Leanne, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie. I'm Julie Hart. We'll go to Chatham, and it's Dan. Dan, you're on.
Yeah, hi. So I have an issue with birds crashing into my really, really large glass patio doors and windows. And the most problems occur right around now with baby robins.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the rest of the year, I might have a cardinal, but they don't crash into it. They just tap against their, you know, their reflection. But the baby robins must go in at, full speed and break their neck, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out. I've hung strings. I've tried to do all sorts of different things. Now I'm wondering, I was going to spray the windows like when I see in cars it says for sale or just married, or then I was reading about stickers or decals you can put on. Do any of these things work? Or,
yeah.
Or is it mostly just the baby robins?
Yeah.
Can you go back to, you've said you've tried strings. So I use strings in my windows. They have to be 3 inches or less apart. So that's pretty dense.
Yeah,
you
that's
have to
the
use
problem.
A lot.
Yes.
So you can't see, you might as well board up the window.
Yeah,
you can't
even
see out of the window.
I have a span of 12 feet of glass.
Yeah, so you need to do every 3 inches at the most. You need to have a string hanging down. Or if you're going to use the stickers and the decals, the same thing. If you have any gaps, sometimes they even recommend now 2 inches. But if you have any gaps bigger than 2 or 3 inches, the bird is going to think it can fly right through. So you need to break
that
up.
And then you have the issue with vertical. In other words, if these windows are 9 feet high and the strip and the glass spread out, you know, let's say 12 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it's almost impossible to cover everything.
Well, there are transparent tapes that you could put on there that reflect an ultraviolet spectrum that the birds see and you don't, and it will deter them from flying into it. Mm-hmm. You could go to American Bird Conservancy online. That's a not-for-profit that has recommendations for that sort of window collision prevention.
Yep, and the same thing.
Okay, are
with
there
the
any
tape.
Sprays or anything?
No,
any sprays that you can put.
You're just married spray. That will do the trick. And
like waxy. What is it? Like the marker stuff too. I think that also works.
Right, but I got to be sure that I can get it off the windows.
Yeah,
make
sure you can do that. You don't want a permanent fix.
Yeah.
And that will work. I mean, that's a little excessive. But if it does the trick and saves the robins and the other birds in your backyard, that's a great approach.
Well, if there's a spray that you can wash off with a hose, that's a lot better than putting stickers every 2 inches up and down. I would imagine it's vertical distance and horizontal distance.
Yeah,
I probably need hundreds of them.
You can just do, if you were to get the tape that you put on the windows, you can do just vertical lines. That will work.
And they are transparent. You can look through them.
You can see out.
Okay. Well,
so
Dan,
where do you get the tape?
Go to American Bird Conservancy website, and they have loads of recommendations there.
Well, all right, Dan, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to, is it Alyssa in Warwick? Alyssa, is that you?
Yes, it is.
You're on. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So I have barn swallows in my horse barn, and one nest, they always have successful 2 or 3 broods. There's a pair of breeders in there that the chicks have some kind of a genetic problem where they cannot fly.
Mm-mm.
So I have a chick that's been in one of the stalls now for 3 days, and it's so upsetting because, like, it's screaming, you know, the parents, I think, are feeding it. But it will not be able to fly. This has happened like multiple times where I would put the bird back in the nest and it's back on the floor or it hops outside, but it never seems to be able to fly. And I don't know if there's something genetic passed on by the parents, but I just don't know what to do about the bird because it's going to die.
Mm.
And I don't know if I should euthanize it or... Like, what's the kindest thing to do?
Julie's shaking her head.
And Rich also wants to say, we both want to say something.
All right. Well, fight it out, you two. And
go ahead.
Somebody say something.
I mean, I guess I'm not convinced that it won't be able to fly. So almost all of these small, what we call passerines, the songbirds, do have a stage, the fledgling stage, where they are out of the nest and they can't fly yet. And that will last 3, maybe even 5 days. So that is a normal stage. And the parents do come to it and feed it.
Okay.
And then eventually it will learn to fly. That's one option.
Yeah, go ahead. Well,
the wings looked a little bit deformed. Okay. And I usually find them dead in a week or two.
Okay. Well, something is certainly going on there, it seems. You can go to find a licensed wildlife rehabilitator and get an evaluation from a practice professional in that field.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to the New York State Environmental Conservation website and look up rehabilitator, wildlife rehabilitator, And you could scroll down there and look for the one that's nearest you that handles migratory birds, which is a barn swallow, and contact them with this information. And they will likely get back to you with either a suggestion or an approach that you can take. They may be willing to take it in and do an evaluation. If there's something going on, it may be genetic or it may have something to do with chemicals in the area that are causing some disruption in the bird's development. So that information would be...
It's just that one nest. The other nest, there's no problem. They fledge, they're fine, they're perfect. Like, you know, because like the when they're ready to fledge, usually with the barn swallows that I've seen here for years, they the parents start flying around like crazy, telling them, okay, it's time to get out. And they just take off and fly. They don't usually land on the floor first.
Understood.
They just, they're ready to go and they go.
So you have something that's...
And this one set of parents... It fails over and over and over.
Understood. So with that, I would urge you to be in contact with the DEC licensed rehabilitator for an evaluation. And if it's something specific going on with that pair, then the science community wants to know what's going on there.
Yeah. All right.
There's something bigger than what meets the eye in the back of my mind. So please follow up on that and see if perhaps we can get down to what is really the problem, if it's environmental, if it's genetic, or something we don't understand yet. It's worth investigating, in my opinion.
All right, Alyssa, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, and we'll go to Red Hook. It's Sharon's turn. Sharon, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have hummingbirds every year, and about 3 years ago, I had really, really friendly hummingbirds. They would come to my face and beep when they wanted sugar water and eat my flowers. Well, one day I was standing there, and I don't know if they were dancing or mating, but two of them seemed to fly around, and they came up to each other and backed off several times, and then they seemed to connect tail to tail. So one was up and one was upside down. And then they proceeded to spin very fast in opposite directions, creating the most beautiful geometric pattern while they flew. It lasted about 10 or 15 seconds, and then they separated and flew away. And wow. I wasn't quite sure if they were performing for me or mating.
Wow. Did the male ask for a sandwich afterwards?
Or a cigarette? No.
Okay. What do you think, Julie? You're the expert on such things.
I think it was probably a fight that she was watching. Yeah.
Really?
What would you say, Rich?
Well, that little dance that they were doing could have a double meaning. Hummingbirds do their territorial defense and also their love courtship dance. And that consists of this sort of an up and down zigzag pattern that they do either simultaneously or solo. But that's could also be what's going on. And the other thing is it could be a couple of juveniles. We were talking earlier, these juvenile delinquents, you never know what they're going to do next.
Come on. Well, now, hey, wait a minute.
So, I would say that nothing personal, but it was not about you.
Okay.
Yes.
No, I didn't think so. But I have to say that the geometric pattern that they formed while they did this was absolutely amazing. It was sort of like a three-dimensional diamond that just kind of kept spinning and spinning. It was incredible, really. Mm. And I felt very blessed when I saw
that
it.
That is cool.
But I have no idea what the heck it was.
Well, I were you, I would take that in and relish it.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
I have not. I've seen them do their little aerial dance, but not this.
Yeah.
I have too, yes.
All I'm thinking of is like when you have two birds that are fighting midair and they are basically entangled and they like spin all the way down to the ground together.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar, but not quite the same, it sounds
like. So it must be in the perception. Sharon, are you an artist by any chance? I'm not joking.
I'm not.
No? Well, but you have an artistic sensibility. No. If you're seeing that, yeah. You should be maybe paint that.
Or poetry or some visual
yeah.
art.
I couldn't even try to draw it. I'm a stick figure girl all the way.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Okay, well, listen, we have to take a break. Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Yeah, it gets a little weird at times, but, you know, I'm sure it'll stay tolerable, and we'll be going another 20 minutes. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And the number is 800-348-2551. Couple emails here before we jump back to the phones for the home stretch. This one's from Beverly. Subject heading, Hummers bulking up? My Hummer regulars are at the feeder around the clock this last week. Are they already bulking up for fall migration?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will be starting to leave. Others will linger longer, perhaps into September.
Yeah.
So by all means, keep the hummingbird feeders going. If you got good wildflowers, keep them well watered.
All right. This is from John. Red Tail Tears. A frequent walk here on a steep hill with bluffs in western Massachusetts has two less than full-sized red tail hawks perching, soaring, and vocalizing in what I anthropomorphize as recently separated young calling on their mom who moved on. Is that how it goes at this time of year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
tough
just
love, man.
They're saying, "Mama, mama,
mm-hmm. help me."
That's sad.
feed me.
Ain't nature wonderful? This is from Julie. Ladder-backed woodpeckers and hummingbirds. This year, the ladder-backed woodpeckers have been coming to the hummingbird feeders, intimidating the hummingbirds. What can be done to discourage the ladder backs or encourage the hummingbirds? And that's from Julie.
Hmm.
Well, first, we're not dealing with ladderback woodpeckers. That's the red-bellied woodpecker.
Yeah.
A bit of a misnomer. I like the name ladderback, but it's already been taken.
By yeah. what? A snake?
By a woodpecker
another
species.
Woodpecker.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
West.
Yeah,
yeah. So, I also have red bellies that come in and are drinking from the hummingbird feeder.
Yeah,
is
that's
that
becoming
quite creative.
It's becoming more and more common. The word is out there that there's a good chow at that red nectar feeder.
Yeah.
So
it's funny.
Can anything be done to discourage them?
No.
Mm-mm.
Enjoy.
I'm amazed by this because what you say to me is they didn't used to do this
no.
X number of years ago.
Not to
so
my knowledge.
What does this tell us about the institutional memory of the species?
It is good.
And
it is learned.
And I'm only seeing young birds at my feeder doing it. I'm not seeing any adults. So I'm like, I don't know where they learned this.
So interesting.
They watch and they pick it up, and the red-bellied woodpecker is new to the neighborhood, so they're still learning the ropes here. So
relatively speaking,
15 years ago they were not here. 20 years ago they just started surging on it, and they're kind of like learning the tricks of the street, and they're picking up on it.
All right. Well, listen, I was going to go right back to the phones, but one more email because Jen included some wonderful pictures of black buzzards or black vultures,
black
right?
Vultures.
Same thing?
Yeah.
Jen writes, the black buzzards continue to visit and bring their young for lunch on a daily basis. In fact, they land on my porch railings and stare at me through the window until I bring them munchies. Attached, please find a photo of baby Buzzy from a couple days ago, plus one of the parents. Do they only have one baby at a time? Do they have more than one brood per season? I've become quite attached to them. Look
aww.
At those beautiful pictures. Two of them just hanging out, having a snack.
Lovely.
Very nice.
Isn't that nice?
I mean,
put it in the Atlas. Put it in the
okay.
Atlas.
Okay, once again, how do we do it?
Yeah, we go to ebird.org/atlasny. And I say that because it's really hard to confirm the breeding locations for both of our vulture species, for turkey and black vulture, because a lot of the time they're nesting in private barns, and
yeah.
and the birders don't get to go inside of anyone's barn, right? Because they're on private property. So if you do see that, like we
once again,
definitely want that.
The URL is
ebird.org/atlasny.
Okay, so that's the thing to do, Jen. Yes. Great pictures. We loved them. The vultures seem very smart to me. Am I just misreading them?
The black vulture is, they appear to be very smart, but what it is that they're very bold, tenacious, and stubborn.
Yeah.
And so they will approach closer and let stand there longer. So, yeah, they seem to have a better knack of adapting than the turkey vulture. They are also a new kid on the block. So 10 years ago, 15 years, zero from present. Now they're all over the place.
All right, looping back to the big birds, DEC kind of keeping track of the turkeys. How are the turkeys doing? They seem to ebb and flow, the populations.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that right. They do ebb and flow. There's
sorry, Zach.
they do come and go. I mean, it's all depends on the success of the nesting season. And that's very local. I mean, in one area, they could be numerous, in another area, scarce. This year, next year, it will be the reverse.
All right, back to the phones, and we'll go to Dormansville up in the beautiful Helderbergs. Ricky, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
A while back, this is a rural area, very quiet, and so when the birds are, making a racket, they're doing their thing, they're singing their songs and everything, they seem to be all over the place. And then one day, a while back, I went out of my house, and I noticed that it was very quiet. There was still a few birds, but very few. It seemed to me like less than a half dozen. And I couldn't think of any connection to anything else except that it was like a day or two after the summer solstice. So my question is, would birds know when the summer solstice has happened?
Not really. They do know when the days are getting longer and shorter, but that has nothing to do with the vocalizing. What it is the nesting cycle, which is kind of connected to the day, length of the day. But as soon as they start nesting and their courtship is done with, and when they're no longer defending the boundaries of their territory, they dummy up. And no sense wasting all that energy singing when they can be eating.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. How do we really know what they know? In other words, I've read that whales can tell the phases and motions of the moon and things like that. How do we know what birds know?
We could only observe what they're doing and correlate it to the solar cycle or the various external features that might affect or influence the behavior. We can only interpret. We don't
understand. Julie?
Yeah, that's correct. It's mostly observing and finding relationships and patterns.
The number here is 800-348-2551. To Fort Johnson, New York we go. It's Charles. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a lot of birds here, pleated woodpeckers, and I have a few ponds, and I've noticed there's been two great white herons. Is that rare for upstate New York?
Not this time of year. What you got there is great egrets. The great white heron is actually a specific name for a specific bird that would be rare anywhere north of Florida, north of the Florida Keys. But the great egret nests a little bit to our south, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland. And after the nesting season, they get up and start wandering around the Northeast and all the way up to Canada. So beginning about the middle of July, well into August, into September, the great egret, which is that big white one with the yellow bill and the black legs, and its little cousin, the snowy egret, and some of the rarer ones, the little blue heron and the tricolor heron, they all get up and wander around. It's post-breeding dispersal, they call it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's just as big as a gray heron, this bird is. So it's an egret, is it?
Yes, that's the number, okay. Yes.
All right, Charles, thank you very much. To Saugerties and James. James, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Good. So so I was recently at my mom's house in Woodstock, and there were two very large hawks that were in the trees. We were in the swimming pool. So I didn't have my glasses on. I couldn't really see them very well. And they were kind of, I guess you could say, chirping at each other. And it didn't. They didn't sound like red-tailed hawks because I'm very familiar with their cry. And they were just, it was very distinct, two-note chirps. And they were in tree, perched up in trees about 100 yards from each other. And they went back and forth and did this chirping back and forth with two notes for a good 20 minutes. I don't think they were red-tailed hawks. Were they red-shoulder hawks?
Julie's nodding.
Like I said, I couldn't see them because I didn't have my glasses on.
James, can you imitate them? Can you imitate them for us? That will help.
Just two bright chirps. Chirp, chirp.
Oh, you got to do that again.
That was a poor impression.
No, that sounded great.
Sorry.
All right. So what do you think, Julie? Just
back and forth. Chirp, 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 chirp. Chip, chip.
Now we're
chip,
getting
chip,
somewhere.
Back and forth for 20 minutes.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would say either red-shouldered or broadwing. But yeah, I'd probably go towards red-shouldered.
Rich.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Because I know that the red-shoulders are a woodland species.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They like to hang out in the woods, and that's where I was. So that was where my mind went automatically. But I went online. I couldn't find any calls that mimicked what I heard exactly.
Hmm.
Well, next time you get an opportunity, see if you get your recorder going and submit it to Merlin and see if Merlin can come up with a good idea or. They will put it in their data bank and reproduce it, and perhaps it will be something you could add to the repertoire, to the collection. The other possibility would be broadwing hawk, which also is a woodland hawk species, and Woodstock could happen there.
What does that sound like, Rich?
Well, actually, they have a very strange high-pitched whistle.
Oh, let's hear it.
Yeah, and it does not sound like a hawk. It sounds more like a cowbird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you got? Let's hear it.
Well, I could do the cow part of the cowbird thing, but not the bird part of the cowbird thing. So I'll pass.
All right, fine. James, thank you very much. And remember, don't bring your phone in the pool with you because bad things could happen. But
yeah. So do you think it was more likely a red shoulder or a broadwing?
I'll go with red shoulder hawk up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they like to be near water, and you got a pool there, so that might.
Oh, fair enough. All right, James, thanks a lot. Let's go to Plainfield, Massachusetts. Phoebe, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question about turkeys. I was out walking with my grand dog this morning, and he chased a hen and up in a field, and up flew about a dozen little chicks, about maybe 8-10 inches tall. And now that the hen is still out there, like, seems to be looking for her chicks. And I just wondered if, you know, I'm kind of looking for reassurance that, oh, she's going to find her chicks. It's right next to a wooded area. They all seem to fly into a bunch of trees. So is that likely, do you think, that they will find her?
Sure.
Yes, yeah.
Her clucking, she's out there making that little turkey cluck sound. Cluck, 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 cluck. And they will listen, and sooner or later they'll all get together. It'll be a family reunion.
Yeah.
Assuming, of course, the dog didn't get any of them.
Mm-hmm.
No, he didn't.
So what he did was just give him practice on evasion techniques.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right.
Good.
Thanks a lot,
right.
Susan.
Thanks.
Or Phoebe, I should say. Appreciate the call. Carl in Katona. You guys ever been to Katona?
I have.
One of the most beautiful towns. It's just a village. I don't know if it's a town or village, but it's wonderful.
It's a nice sounding name, too.
I love it. Carl writes, this year there seems to be an onslaught of gray catbirds outnumbering most every other species. Is there a reason that they're so prolific? They're easy to spot by the few orange and red fluff feathers under their tails.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you hit the jackpot on this catbird corner. It's not always the case. I'm going to suggest that you've got very good catbird habitat there, mm-hmm. and when that happens, catbirds take advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Probably you have something that's like some kind of shrub that has a lot of fruit or something, and they're taking advantage of that.
Yeah, right.
That up.
And you have successional generations of catbirds returning and finding an adequate room for the whole family to get together.
It's old money in northern Westchester.
Well, there you go.
All the catbirds drive Bentleys. All right, let's go to Pete in Catskill. Pete, you're on.
Okay. Hey, Rich, this is Pete in Catskill. I just have a quick question. Do birds eat ticks?
Do birds eat ticks?
Yes. Easy.
That was easy.
Oh, okay, that's very good news. Just one other quick question. I haven't seen a lot of bluebirds around Catskill this year, so I don't know what's going on with that. Do you have any ideas?
No, other than... I have not had a problem finding bluebirds just north of Catskill, so I think they're out there. It's just a matter of who has. They've taken to nest boxes quite successfully, and if the people are maintaining good housekeeping on the bluebird nest boxes, they should be utilizing them. If there's a lapse in the maintenance, you know, the evicting the mice and cleaning out the nests periodically, they may skip over and go to the next town up.
Julie?
Okay.
Anything to add to that?
No, I was thinking the same thing. That probably there's a lack of nesting sites, and so they're just slightly shifted their range a little bit.
Okie doke. Pete, thanks a lot. Let's go now to a different Pete. This one has an R at the end of his name. Peter in New Hamburg, you're on.
Hey, how are you? I always call and irritate you.
Oh, congrats.
I'm sitting in my car. And I'm looking out at the Wappingers Creek. I don't know why they call it a creek, because I used to live in New Mexico, and this thing is bigger than the Rio Grande.
Wow.
In Albuquerque.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a growth on the creek. It's some sort of underwater vegetation. And when it comes up, it almost covers the creek solidly, except for... a path where the boaters come through with their kayaks or something like that. Anyway, right now I'm looking at it, and it's really beautiful because there are at least, I'm looking at a dozen of those little white egrets, and they're standing on the vegetation all over the creek.
Well, that's not that annoying, Peter.
Huh?
That's not that annoying, although we are running out of...
I try my best to annoy you. Usually I do, but...
You failed.
So I didn't think that this was...
You're getting good at it.
We only got about 20 seconds here, so let's have our experts...
I'll do better next time, okay?
Well, at the end there, you started annoying me, so it worked out well. All right, so very quickly, what do you have to say, Julie, about that?
I think we talked about that earlier. This is the time of year when a lot of those egrets and herons and ibises, they wander from where they bred, and they start, and they'll go north and check things out.
So what you got is the egrets that are there, the snowy egret or the great egret, and that ugly plant that you love so much is probably the water chestnut. Oh, my God. Oh,
oh really? That's another show? Can we
That's
save
another
that
show.
For next
it's
time?
Out of control, invasive, aggressive invasion of native species. It's ruining our habitat.
Well, goodbye. No, that was great. Thank you. We're done now.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much, Peter.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Mary Michael Shelley, Art of the Everyday, painted wood carvings on exhibit through September 22nd, arkellmuseum.org. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Chops, offering fine artist materials at custom picture framing in Rhinebeck at New Paltz, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. Well, good show. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, everybody who called and wrote in. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Lightning Eddie Rosen screened the calls. Well done, sir. Thank you. Tomorrow, RPI's Jim Handler joins us to talk artificial intelligence. We'll see you at 2:00.